There we go.
I like how the ringing actually lowers in volume. It like fades out for a second before it picks up. Have you ever noticed that?
Yes.
It like...
Yeah. Well, it's the little things. It's the little things that, you know, that make the big things more meaningful.
That's just because you're an Apple apologist, my friend.
It is true. There's nothing they do that's wrong, except that there is.
Yeah, but they seem to be on the right track in the last couple weeks. They seem like a lot of the things they're doing are pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it's an interesting kind of thing where you get so big and we're surprised that they listen, right? I mean, that seems to be with the, I know we're just jumping right in, but the macOS and iOS 27, especially macOS 27 beta, the commentary is around like, oh, wow, Apple listened about like corner radius and icon usage and some of the other feedback that they really got ripped apart for on Tahoe.
Yeah, they actually made this better for us and not for them.
Didn't they get the memo?
Yeah. That doesn't ensure shareholder value.
Right.
Yeah, it's it's a crazy world.
How are you doing?
I'm good. What are we at? Well, let's do the official thing. This is episode 375 of the On Taking Pictures
program. Is it 375?
Wow. 375. Is there 375 something? Does that mean something? It means something.
There's a number. Yeah, numerologists out there are going, oh, this is the show of the rat or something.
With you on it, it is.
Wow, oh! There it is.
I'm okay. How are you? Anything happened in the last few weeks for you?
Yeah, right.
Seriously,
yeah,
you all right?
Yeah, I'm okay. You know, the world grows increasingly unfamiliar to me.
Okay.
And I feel like I'm always sort of tacking in response to it. And it's, you know, whether it's, you know, perceived values or what we are moving towards as a society in terms of importance. You know, it's the constant battle, my own personal sort of battle against like greed and money and power and all that.
Sure.
So, you know, I try to take the little wins in my world, not the world, where I can get them. You know, yesterday I with the help of our neighbor Mark, who is, you know, become a very good friend and a mentor of sorts. We had a leak in one of our copper plumbing pipes, and you know, he came over and helped fix it. And you know, there's that sense of accomplishment of doing it yourself and you know, taking care of your space. And I get an enormous amount of joy out of that. There's a satisfaction to it. I think that's one of the things that I learned from my dad. Although my dad wasn't a great teacher, he didn't have a lot of patience. And Mark, by contrast, is one of the most patient and kind people I've ever met. And in an indirect way, my friendship with him and his sort of mentorship is repairing some of the damage that my father did.
Well, that's pretty great.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful to him for that. So
I was having a bad day the other day, and I was talking to someone who knows somebody that I'm really close to. Mm. I was like, yeah, you know, like if I was gone tomorrow, you know, like whatever. And they said, you don't think that you have made a difference in people's lives? Like, what are you out of your mind? You know?
Yeah.
It's nice to hear sometimes.
It is. It's the difference of being in it or being witness to it, I think.
Sure.
You know, you and I we're in it in these conversations, in our own friendship. But the perception or if you change your perspective on looking at this show or us or whatever, I have learned a ton from people who observe me and comment on me who aren't real close to me.
Yep.
You know, and I'm able to see things through other people's eyes that I don't see through my own. I'm grateful for that.
There's that guy on social media who rides around on a bike in London really early in the morning when the sun first comes up, so there's no one around. Do you ever see this guy?
No.
I forget his name. He gets like a city bike or a BMX bike that he has, and he's got a camera on a stick, like a selfie stick, and he like holds it out like 3 feet, and he rides around town, and he just kind of talks, and then he cuts up chunks of it, and he puts it out there. And he was riding across the Millennium Bridge, which is, you know, right by the Tate Modern and St. Paul's, the footbridge. He's riding his bike across it, which I don't think you're supposed to do, but it was probably 4:30 in the morning because it's one of the longest days of the year. And he said, you know, somebody said to me once something really useful. They said, you know, if you're having a bad day or you feel overwhelmed or whatever it is, you know, you're in the middle of your life and like things are complicated. He said, this guy suggested to him that he just say, just tell yourself like, these are the good days. Like these are the days that someday you're going to look back on and think, oh, in the core of my life, when I was like out there living in the world and whatever it is, like those are the days that I want to get back to. And I've really, the past few days, been trying to like dive into that thought, you know?
Are you able to feel that, or does it still feel like you're reading somebody else's writing?
You know, somebody said to me yesterday, you know, being ready is a choice. Not us, you know, there's, and I think, I don't know. I think I'm sick of feeling the other way. So I'm going to try feeling this way for a while, you know?
Yeah. I can hear that. I mean, I told a friend of mine the other day, I'm so tired of trying to convince myself that I'm okay.
Yeah. So maybe you're not okay and that's okay, but you know, just
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had I had some stuff happen since we last talked. My friend died. William Coupon, the photographer, died.
I mean, there were three big ones that we lost, but yeah. You had a personal connection to one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Coupon was, you know, not a perfect person and kind of a pain in the neck sometimes.
we're all pain in the neck sometimes.
But I mean, the weird thing about it is that, you know, I'm only friends with him because of this show. Because we talked about him as a photographer the week back in, I don't know, 2013 or something.
1978. Yeah. I think it was.
And he must have had a Google, what are those things called when you have a thing that keeps.
Like an alert type thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he emailed me or you or both of us. I don't remember. Do you remember?
If that was a podcast at On Taking Pictures thing or if that was just a Bill thing. I don't remember.
Maybe he singled me out to yell at for once.
You got the facts wrong, you idiots.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, because we talked about a lot of his sort of famous people work, which is the stuff that most people know, but he also did a lot of sort of anthropological work and traveled and, you know, for mostly personal reasons. And I think that I'm going to use this term very lightly. He took offense to the fact that like we were weighing his famous people stuff higher personal work.
Like talking about Don McCullen and not mentioning his landscapes, only talking about the war stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
And me having been, him being a little bit of a hero to me, I was like, well, let's sit down at lunch and talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did. I showed up at his apartment downtown and we hung out and then we went out to lunch and then, you know, we would have lunch every couple months when he was living in New York. Yeah. And I was at his house one day or we were at lunch and he's like, oh, I got to go take somebody's picture. And it was the guy, you know, the song She's Out of My Life, Michael Jackson.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So the guy who wrote that song was coming over, a friend of his, Tom Baylor. Anyway. Was coming over to get his picture taken. And I said, oh, you know, I'll help you set, I'll come back and help you set up. Cause I wanted to see how, you know, the guy does the magic, you know? And so I help him set up the backdrop and I help him put up a light and I put it where I would put it if I was William Coupon taking a William Coupon picture, figuring he would go over and then move it to where it really was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then he proceeded to start taking pictures of me without moving the light at all. So apparently I put it in the same place or he wasn't that anal about it exactly where it went.
Yeah. Do you still have those photographs or did he ever give you those photographs?
Oh yeah. I have pictures he took of me. So, you know, we were friends, whatever. And then he had a bit of a windfall and ended up moving to Santa Fe and bought this cool house. And I went to visit him a couple times out there. Anyway, he got cancer and has been sick for a while. And I would talk to him every once in a while. I got to go get a PET scan. I was like, PET scan? What are you, And I said, you need to go to Sloan or the Mayo Clinic or the Cleveland Clinic. Like, don't mess around, you know, go to a good hospital. Don't go to Albuquerque Regional Medical Center, you know.
Which might be fine. It might be a terrific facility.
I wasn't ripping on Albuquerque Regional Medical Center specifically, but you get my point.
Yeah.
If you have cancer, you go see some of the best people at the very least for a second opinion. And he did. He was like, I'm going to Cleveland Clinic or Mayo next week. How do you know about this? And I'm like, well, this isn't my first cancer rodeo.
Yeah, right. Unfortunate, but true.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, do the treatments, whatever it is. Anyway, a few weeks ago, I kept saying that I was going to go visit him in the last 6 months. And this is so arbitrary and ridiculous, but the flights from New York City to get to Santa Fe from New York City, there are no direct flights to Santa Fe. There are no direct flights to Albuquerque except for during the summer.
Oh, wow.
It used to be year round. JetBlue used to fly to Albuquerque, but they only do it now starting in late May.
Huh.
So otherwise I would have to go through Denver or go through Dallas and it was a lot more expensive. And I was like, God, you know, I want to go see the guy, but I also don't want to spend a fortune to do it. You know, I was trying to be smart about it. And I figured, I'll just go when it gets warmer. Anyway, it gets down to like May 14th when they start flying. And he calls me and he's just, I said, yeah, what's going on? He said, well, you know, they're going to take me off treatment. I have six months.
Yeah.
This was a month ago.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, well, Heather was out of town for the week. And I said, do you want me to get on a plane? Like, I'll go get on a plane tonight if you want me to come down and hang out with you. And he's like, no, I want to feel better before you come down.
Oh, man.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't know. We have discussed this offline.
I mean, it's the exact same thing that happened with Freddie.
Yeah.
With Freddie Clark. Yeah. I'll come up and hang. No, let me get my strength back. Get my strength back.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I said, you know, listen, I'm going to book for 2 weeks from now and I'll send you the specifics. You know, I'll send you an email.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent him an email and he never got back to me. And then I got a note from the woman who was like sort of making him meals, sort of caretaking him the last couple
like
of years.
Yeah, like a caretaker.
Yeah, like just the stuff that he can do when he was
not necessarily
treatment.
A nurse, but like the day to day.
Yeah. And they said, hey, listen, he's not really great at looking at his phone right now. I noticed that you texted and sent this stuff. Like, are you still coming on whatever date? And I said, yeah. And she said, yeah, great. You know, he's looking forward to seeing you, whatever. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. So then it's, I'm supposed to go on Saturday, like 2.5 weeks ago. I was supposed to leave on Saturday. And on Thursday, she texts me and she said, hey, listen, I know you're supposed to come on Saturday, fly in on Saturday night and come up Saturday morning, or Sunday morning, but I don't know if he'll be here on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. I said, okay. So I changed my flight and I packed a bag and 2 hours later I was on my way to JFK and I flew out there.
Yeah.
And I spent 20 hours with him.
Yeah.
Before he passed.
Yeah. And 6 months became 6 weeks. 6 weeks became
2 hours.
Weeks. Yeah, yeah. 6 hours. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't really get to talk to him much because he was in a bad way when I got there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was sitting there and I was in the room at night and it was, you know, quiet and everyone else just gave me some time and I'm sitting there talking to him. And I look up on the wall and there's a big 30 by 45 inch print of the Grand Canyon that I had sent him.
Yeah.
You know, and he had a lot of art on his walls, but he didn't have to have my art on his walls, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was the connection, right? That was, I can't be in New York anymore, but I can have a reminder of my friendship.
But he was never the kind of, you know, there are those people who are sentimentalists when it comes to friendships and, you know, mm-hmm. actually say it. He was not a guy who said it, you know? So just kind of seeing there.
But that
there,
said it. That
yeah,
said
yeah, absolutely. It? Yeah, 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 absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And you know, I was, so I ended up staying there for a few days because my ticket was like 4 days later. So I had like 3 days just sort of going for hikes in New Mexico.
Yeah.
And I went and I got went to the local casino and got a, what's the meat steak thing that you get, this big sliced,
the meat steak thing.
You know what I'm talking about.
The prime rib.
I got a prime rib special at the casino.
I'd like one of those meat steak things, please.
Give me one of those meat steak things.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. And I had huevos rancheros, and I walked around some of the places he and I had been. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's weird. I think to sort of tie it back to what we were talking about originally. You know, he was later in life. He was sick. He is now mm-hmm. gone.
Yeah.
We're still here and we're at the place that he was not long after I met him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We still have all that time in there. And so that whole thing maybe. Is sort of, it's, well, yeah, maybe, you know, God willing.
Yeah. I mean, when the circle shrinks, my experience is you reevaluate time.
Yep.
You reevaluate the speed at which time your sort of local time is affected, right? Time as a construct is not affected, but I believe in my experience, my local time has been affected by loss.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you talk to a 20-year-old kid and they think their entire life is ahead of them in a big, scary way.
Yeah.
And then you get to be our age or a little older, and then it's like the time ahead of you is getting smaller in a scary way.
Yeah.
And you know, and so I don't know. It's I'm processing still this whole experience.
Sure.
It was not an easy experience.
Of course.
And then last week, you know, the family wanted to deal with some stuff before they were sort of public about it. So I just kind of kept my mouth shut, you know, for a while.
Yeah.
My friend Sandy wanted to talk about him on the little on the show we do on YouTube. She and I speaking of seeing. And I said, "You know what? Let me just check and see if they've put out an obituary." And they put out an obituary in the New York Times like literally 55 minutes earlier. So it was, you know, brand new.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, cuz when you and I spoke, I think we either spoke on the day of or the day after.
Yeah, Thursday or Friday.
You were pretty clear about like, yeah, the family doesn't want to, you know, you told me, hey, keep this to yourself because the family, you know, you wanted to give them.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
it wasn't
the grace.
For public consumption. It wasn't.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. That's what I was trying to get to.
Which is, you know, and whatever. I mean, listen, facts are facts. A person is dead. It's not going to change the world, whether other people know or not, in my opinion. But
I think it was a respect thing.
Absolutely.
And I applaud you for you know, erring on their side rather than, you know. Yeah.
So anyway, I open up this and it was really nice obituary in the New York Times. Lots of pictures. It's a nice article. And then you get down to the bottom and there's my picture of him.
Yeah. Wild, right?
And it was. The family must have given, and I don't think they knew it was my picture. So they said, in this undated self-portrait.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I looked up who wrote the obit, and I found their email, and I sent them an email. I said, listen, thanks so much for writing this nice obituary about my friend. By the way, just as a matter of course, the portrait at the bottom is neither a self-portrait nor undated. It's from 2016, and it's actually my portrait of him. And they said, oh, you know, sorry, I'll send it up the chain, you know. And about an hour later, I get a letter from an email from the editor saying, oh, sorry, didn't know it was yours. Like, do you mind if we use it? Do you have a higher res version? You know, that kind of thing. We'll send you just some paperwork if that's cool. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. And then they were just like, oh, we'll send you $175. And I was like, that's fine. And so I'm actually still going back and forth with them because the contracts they keep sending me are like these crazy, can use this image and sublicense it to people and all this. I'm like, what? No, but yeah, it's whatever. It's just paperwork. But
why can't things be simple?
Yeah. Anyway, but within like an hour they had changed it and they gave me credit. Now I don't really care about the credit other than the fact that like, if that's going to be the New York Times forever, I don't want other people grabbing it as a self-portrait. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to correct the record.
It's a matter of clarity more than anything else. Yeah.
Right.
I understand.
Yeah. And I certainly don't mind the New York Times using it, but this gets back to the whole crazy thing. It's like, this guy was a hero of mine, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
And in the New York Times, his picture in his obituary is mine.
Yeah.
Like, what a weird full circle, you know? I can't help. And the fact that he used it in his book and stuff, it's like it's a little bit of a, like you're saying about your neighbor. It's a little bit of a, like an unofficial pat on the back.
Yeah.
You're doing okay.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's, you know, these are the things. Let's see. How can I say this? It's not the fact that the photograph is in the New York Times, except that it is, but that serves as a reminder. I would imagine I'm spitballing here, but if it were me, it would serve as a reminder of the importance of that person in my life. It would allow me every time I look at that, I'm not going to look at the photograph and go, wow, it's in the New York Times. I'm going to think about the times that we had together, that person and me. You know, I'm going to think about what I learned, what I taught, what we experienced. Hey, you remember that time we went to lunch and we got that pastrami sandwich and they forgot the pick, like whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's the little incidental things that you think don't mean a thing in the moment, but that's what you're going to remember.
Well, I'll tell you what I remember. That day, Coupon came out to Park Slope and we had lunch at the diner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the diner that you shot the flick in? That diner?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So we're sitting at the diner. Actually, there were two stories. One, we're sitting there, and he said, "You know, do you have that corner like just at your house all the time? Like, is it set up?
The one that you built?"
Yeah. And I said, "Yeah." Why? And he goes, "Well, because I haven't had my picture taken in a long time."
Oh, is this portrait in that corner?
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I know we probably talked about that, but I've completely forgotten about that because you destroyed that not long after, right?
No, I destroyed it actually fairly recently, last year.
Oh, okay. I thought you'd gotten rid of it.
But it's just like he was bringing up my corner because he wanted me to take his picture.
Like this little sort of backhanded ask. Yeah. That's great. Little sheepish ask.
Totally. Yeah. And
how did that feel in the moment? Do you remember? Because you really looked up to this man as an influence, right?
I mean, there was like this moment of, we could do that. We can, you know, we could go back to my place.
Try to play it cool.
Yeah. You know, and he would listen. The guy would call, especially years after that. He would call and I just put him on speakerphone and my wife and I would just like talk to Coupon for an hour while he's driving in the car. It's not like he was like some person on high or anything like that.
But there is some of that, right?
I mean, it's weird. Heather always likes to tell this story. We were meeting him for dinner and, Heather got to the place first and I was late. And Coupon showed up and he like shows up in this like black tracksuit, like these weird outfits that he used to wear. And Heather's, I'm sure, in some sort of like workwear, you know, work dress kind of thing, like sitting at this table at this fancy Greek place in Midtown. Apparently the hostess lady like comes walking over to Heather and is just like, this guy says he's with you. Is he with you? Like, and she's like, yeah, he's with me. And he's like right behind the hostess. He's like, I told you so. I told you. I was. so wait, one more story. So we're at the diner after he asked me and we get up to leave and we're going to pay. And Nick, the guy who runs the place up there, looks at Coupon. He goes, don't I know you? Coupon's like, I don't think so. You know, like, you know, no, I've never been here before. He's like, man, I know you. And Coupon's like, sorry, man, I don't know, whatever, you know. And we're paying whatever it is. Nick is like kind of stewing on it, and he goes, 2J tuna melt. And Coupon looks up, he goes, what? And he goes, 2J, you get tuna melts. Apparently, Nick's father also owned a diner in the ground floor of Coupon's Manhattan building, and Nick used to deliver to Coupon.
And his apartment was 2J.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And Nick remembered it.
Wow.
And, you know, and it's like, again, these are the stories that I remember about him, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He told me the stories about shooting Miles Davis and blah, blah, blah. Like, I know all those too, but those are in books and in whatevers. And I recorded a Pals with Bill Wadman with him. I'll stick it in the show notes.
Yeah, put it in the show notes. There is something, you know, there is that phrase, right? Don't never meet your heroes and all
sure.
that.
But a lot of times it's true.
But a lot of times it's not.
Yeah.
You know, I have met some people who have been heroes in one way or another. And they, I think in my experience, you get what you give.
Yeah.
And there is value, I believe, in not necessarily hero worship, but hero appreciation.
Yep.
You know, I don't think you have to be obsessed with that person, but to acknowledge that this person has influenced you and inspired you in a way, and then to be put in a position where you can communicate that as gratitude.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want that?
Yeah. And, you know, yes, there are people who are your heroes. Of course, they are just people like you.
Sure.
But there's a sort of duality to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, they are just people, but yes, they could be somebody who inspires you or
whatever. Whether that's on a personal level or from a distance.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I wrote a piece, the last newsletter was ostensibly inspired by the Rush shows in LA recently. Sure. And it got me thinking about Neil Peart and how so many of the books, ideas, ideologies that I was exposed to at that point in my life were because of him.
Yeah.
I started changing
your name to Tom Sawyer in college.
Yeah, that's right. No, but I mean, his lyrics turned me on originally to Ayn Rand.
Sure.
And then The Fountainhead turned me on to Frank Lloyd Wright and, you know, reading, you know, It, the whole piece was about being inspired by the work that inspires the people who inspire you and following those chains down. And I think there's value in that because you're going to look at maybe Coupon and maybe you have already and go, well, what lit him up? And sure. You're going to go down that road
sure.
And that may tangentially inspire you. It may not, but I find it completely fascinating to learn what influences and inspires the people who influence and inspire me.
Yeah. 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 It's the chain can go in weird directions, you know?
Yeah.
And you had
the good fortune to have it not just be through magazines and interviews and third party contact, but to call this person a friend and to call this person, you know, a peer in some respects.
Yeah.
What a gift.
Yeah. I mean, my relationship with him was interesting and you know, on and off because just he was kind of mercurial. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it now and it's kind of one of those things that I have now done in my, you know, like it's a chunk of my life is like, oh, being friends with this person who's now longer here. You know, what's interesting about it?
Yeah. Yo, go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Just like that if. Remember those Gantt chart things, you know, that people used to make back in the...
A what kind of chart?
Gantt chart. It's like a time from left and right. And then there's like bracketed areas. Like we're doing design from day 2 to day 17.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like those kinds of things.
I didn't know that's what that was called. Yes.
And then they can overlap, you know, the sort of rows can overlap. It's sort of, it's weird that the Gantt chart of William Coupon has ended. If you look at the scope of my life, you know? That's what's weird is that he came into my life in 2013. He's out of my life in 2026. Not directly, that he's like not.
Yeah. Indirectly, there will still be influence.
Absolutely.
And you just said so funny. I'm sorry. Really weird. He's out of my life. And then we started talking about the guy who wrote She's Out of My Life.
God, it's a great song.
And a little voice crack at the end.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, if anybody hasn't heard Michael Jackson's She's Out of My Life off of Off the Wall, it's so great.
Oh, what is it? Damned Indecision and Cursed Pride?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Indecision and Cursed Pride.
Yeah. Don't sing it. We're going to get hit with a bill.
Oh, anyway, go ahead.
No, I don't know. I'm glad you had the experience of knowing him. And I'm also very glad that you got the experience of letting him go, because I know that whether he could vocalize it or not, it probably meant the world that you were there.
Yeah. Can I also just throw out as a general life thing?
Yeah.
It is really hard to be somewhere when someone dies.
Yes, it is.
It is a huge honor to be there when someone dies.
Yeah.
And if you are ever on the fence of, oh, I don't know if I should go, or I don't know if I'll be able to handle it, or I want to stick my head in the sand and just want this all to be over and then I'll come up when it's all over, really fight that feeling. I think being there, if you can be, is incredibly important. And if I had gotten a call on Friday night and they said, I know you're supposed to come tomorrow, but, you know, he passed away 2 hours ago, I would regret that for the rest of my life. That I was supposed to have been there and I wasn't there. And I'm glad
I sit with. Yeah. It's hard to sit with. I mean, I spoke to Freddie on a Thursday and he was gone on Sunday. Yeah. And it's still in there. It's not we hadn't had anything scheduled, so it was a little different than your situation, but I will forever wish that I just would have gone.
Yeah.
And 5 minutes would have been enough.
So maybe that's, you know, the lesson for you going forward and me going forward and people listening going forward. Although when I walked in, it's funny, his aide, Victoria, like looked at me. She goes, "You're Bill?" She's like, "You're so young." I was like, "Yeah." Yeah.
Yeah. Not anymore.
She's like, everybody else who's visited, they've been all old like him. And I was like, well, I'm young. I'm the young friend.
But now he's no longer in pain. Now he's no longer suffering. I mean, all of those things that people say to those who are left behind are also true.
Yep. Absolutely.
And there is a sense of comfort in that.
Sure. So anyway, thank you for letting me tell that story.
No,
of
course.
This show does more than just, you know, you and I talking. It can lead to friendships that lead to heavy moments in our lives, you know?
100%.
So anyway, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, we also lost Hockney.
Yeah.
Dwayne Michaels.
And it's funny because
that was another big one.
Yeah. My friend of mine is good friends with Dwayne Michaels. And last time we had lunch, I was talking about how Coupon was not doing well. And I was talking about, like, I hope he has a plan for stuff. And I said, does Dwayne have a plan for all of his, you know, whatever? And he was kind of giving me the outlines of the plan that apparently Dwayne had for stuff, because he knew he was getting older. And then when I was out there in Santa Fe, and somebody, I don't know how they found out, heard about Coupon and sort of blabbed about it on Instagram or something. And,
but before it was released.
Yeah. And like a couple of days after. And, my friend texts me and says, you know, oh, are you aware of this? Like, yeah, pretty aware, you know, it's like, yeah. Pretty darn aware. Yeah. Couldn't be more aware. And then, you know, and then 2 weeks later, Dwayne passes away.
Was what, 96, 94, yeah,
Dwayne was.
I mean, a very long life.
Dwayne had a good long life, 94 years. Yeah. Yeah. Coupon was 73. So, I mean, there's another 21 years that he could have had, you know.
If there is a, Not a positive, but it is kind of a positive. If there is a positive to take away from some of this, is that the interest that we often take. You know, like I've gone back and now looked at Dwayne's work, yes, but more than that, because I was more familiar with Dwayne's work than Hockney's work. I've gone back and looked at Hockney's work, and I remember seeing a show that he did at the Getty, and this must have been, I don't know, 2013, 14, something around there.
Yeah.
And I was largely, you know, I knew some of his stuff, but, you know, like I was more interested in like the early stuff that he did with the Quantel paint box when that first came out, and yep, some of the stuff with like photocopying, like some of the more sort of abstract technique that he was interested in.
Yep.
But when someone passes, it's often a reason to go back and look at what made them them.
Yeah.
From a professional standpoint, anyway. I know, yep, we don't know anything about them personally through that, but yeah. So in some ways,
yeah, oh,
go ahead.
No,
go
I was ahead. Just gonna say, isn't it interesting? Like somebody like Hockney, who you know was young gay painter in London, you know, like that was like his persona early in his career. Mm-hmm. And then he moves to California, and he, you know, it's the paintings of him and the boys, like around the pool, like the famous stuff that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then he started doing all the interesting photographic stuff, which I actually like a lot. The stuff where he shoots a scene in a bunch of different angles and then puts it all together, like a bunch of Polaroids on the wall and stuff.
Yeah.
I think those are really successful. But what's interesting about it is that at the time, those were probably, what the hell is this weird thing that he's doing? And now you look at it as, oh, that was just a period of his life in 1986 or whatever it is that he was doing that. It's like whatever you think is taking you away from you being you will someday be part of you, as long as you like let it a little bit of time pass, you know?
And it may inspire other people to do. I mean, I remember I was working at a post-production house in the early 90s and they were editing a commercial. I think it was a Nike commercial. And they had built this rig with a bunch of different cameras with different focal length lenses. And they were, you know, running behind people who were running or biking behind people who were biking. So you had that very similar kind of Polaroid thing that Hockney did with stills now in motion.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I had ever seen something like that.
Yeah.
But you can draw that parallel. You're like, obviously they, well, maybe not obviously, but it would seem that they had seen Hockney's work and then said, okay, well, what if we did this way? And I think it's fascinating how things show up, whether it's direct or indirect. It's really interesting to me.
Yeah. It's neat stuff, I guess. I don't know. I just don't know, Jeffrey. Hey, you know, I had a thing in my show notes. This is a question for you.
Yes.
I this is what I wrote, and let's see if it gives you any sort of, if it gives you a jumping point.
Or was it just the meds wearing off?
No. Here it is. Okay. Pressing buttons harder when they don't work as well as they should. Have you ever had a piece of gear or something where it's like, it doesn't always do it the right thing? And what you do is you kind of mash the button to, like,
yeah,
you're supposed to be doing this. You know that feeling?
I've had remotes, game controllers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that a relatively accurate sign of bad gear, like bad gear design? if you have to, like, there's something wrong if you have to sort of, if you're like pushing a button too hard. You know,
yes. Or if when you're on that screen or in that portion of the app or whatever, it doesn't do anything.
Yes.
And then it just becomes bad UX, right? I should be able to do this with this, but I'm not able to do this. And it's not a fault of the hardware. It's poor design.
Yeah. Why isn't this stupid thing working? You know, like that whole thing.
Yeah.
I just thought, I never do that on gear that I like. You know, on my Pentax, I'm never like, I gotta put this stupid button. Why isn't it doing the thing? I'm just like, okay, yeah, I'm touching the button and it's doing what it says it's supposed to do, like what it says on the tin. You know,
yeah.
I just found that really interesting. I was mashing.
I wonder what inspired that you to write that down.
Oh, I don't know. Nothing.
Was it? Is it something that we talked about on the last?
Fuji. I'm sorry. What?
Oh, what? What? Fuji. Wait, Did I see that you put up you're selling a lens? Was that you?
No. Am I selling a lens? I might be.
I thought you were selling a Fuji lens.
A while back I was trying to, and no one bought it, so I still have it in the closet. 50 millimeter.
I thought it came up on Threads or something.
Oh man, how old is it? Maybe Threads spit it up and did something.
I don't know. I somebody sent something and it was a Threads link and I clicked on it and I didn't have Threads, so I had to install Threads to see the Thread link, and then it was just really uneventful, so I deleted it again. I know. don't send me Threads links. Don't send me Instagram links. Don't if you want to send me something, just, you know, give me the gist of it.
I think they're called Insta links.
Is that what it's called now?
No, I don't know. They should though. They should just brand absolutely everything. Everybody else seems to.
They could just call them stinks.
Okay, I need to put some links to Dwayne Michaels. If you guys don't know, do we use Dwayne Michaels as a photographer of the week ever?
We had to have. I mean, I would think so.
I don't know. As if we could get some sort of system to check that out.
Yeah, if only somebody would create a persistent document that you could look through.
I think, didn't somebody at one point have a thing of all of our stuff? All the different photographers of the week? Oh, Dwayne Michaels. Photographer of the week. In episode 91 in 2014, Jeffrey.
I think it was Christopher Matheson who came up with a list of all of the photographers of the week.
They did? Yeah. There's some good ones in there.
Yeah.
I have a thing to talk about after, but I want you to tell me about your last couple weeks. What's going on in your head?
Oh, man. I don't know what's going on in my head.
Getting out, you're working on stuff. You're doing.
I'm writing a lot more. I'm taking more walks. I'm thinking. As I said at the top, like the direction of things is increasingly unfamiliar to me, and there's a realization that while I can't necessarily change the world, I can work on my world. I can work on my environment, my habitat, if you will.
Yep.
And I think it's doing things at home. You know, we've got some projects around the house that we're doing. I'm working on resurfacing our deck. There is an idea of extending our driveway around the carport into the backyard and then building an outbuilding that maybe it's a studio, maybe it's I don't know yet, but just kind of thinking about making the environment that I'm in more complete.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
The street that we live on is terrific. And it's, you know, there that for all my looking for community, and this is kind of funny, for all my looking for community for years and years, there is community where I live. You know, we know most of our neighbors by name, and the ones that we don't know by name still wave, you know, so there is.
It's been here all the time.
Yeah, it really has. You know, it's
okay, Dorothy.
I know. In a lot of ways, you know, and I think that we sometimes frame things as it has to look like this in order to count. And if it doesn't look like this, it doesn't count.
Yeah.
And it's there in a different form, you know. I mean, you and I have both talked about, and Freddie was a big fan of the G+ community when that was going on.
Sure.
And, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, we have talked about the sort of, oh, I wish that there was something like that. I wish there was something like that. And it wasn't that we want, at least speaking for me, myself, it wasn't that I want another G+. It was, I want the interaction that we had on that platform. And, you know, so I had this little, I think a sort of a box that I was saying, okay, community has to look like this.
Yeah.
And in fact, it can look a bunch of other different ways.
Do you think you have a need to define things before you can recognize them?
I think we all do to a certain degree. Yeah. I think that, you know, sometimes, yes, that is true for me. And I can't, if it doesn't look like that, I'm not as readily able to see it.
Okay.
And I think one of the advantages of, if there is an advantage to the world kind of being the way it is right now, I am looking at things through a different lens, or I'm trying to.
Yeah.
And see the my friend Jude sent me a quote the other day, and he said this hits me, see if it rings true for you. And it just said, stop showing up for people who don't care whether you're in the room.
Yep.
And I went, wow. Yeah. Okay.
You know, this something like that came up the other day in a group dinner thing. And I said, you know, what's weird about that is it's true. You know, I would continue to keep showing up, even if I don't get anything out of it, because I feel like if I don't show up and then the person says, see, Bill's a jerk for not showing up, even the right. You know what I mean?
Doesn't that become some weird self-fulfilling prophecy? Oh,
yeah. Cause then I'll feel guilty for not showing up, cause they're mad at me for not showing up. When I do show up, I don't get anything back. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's like this weird self-flagellation cycle.
So does showing up then become some performative thing? So you can say, see, I showed up.
Yep. Yeah. Right.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not with everybody, but I think that there are instances where that's the psyche, the psychic mm-hmm. twist, you know? It's almost, I can always be the better person, and therefore, you know, therefore I'm above reproach somehow.
If that person doesn't care that you are the better person, or doesn't acknowledge, or even is not able to see.
What do I care what that person thinks at all?
What do you care? Yeah.
I mean, you know, the reality is that not everyone's opinion deserves weight in your mind.
Yes, 1,000%. You but know, we, for whatever reason, we sometimes, at least I get stuck in that thing going, well, I'm doing this, so you should be doing that.
You know, somebody wrote in coupons. It was either in his, like a Facebook post his family put up or on, I think it was actually on his obituary in the comments. All these people, oh, so sad to lose him. What a wonderful work, blah, blah, blah. And there's one person, kind of boring, just like a backdrop and one light. That's like something like a kid would do now.
Okay, well, and a kid would probably not even use the light. They would just use some sort of computational add a light, kind of thing.
But yeah. I remember seeing that and for a second there, I was like, funny. Oh, you stick your son of a little, you know. But the reality is, it's some freaking idiot on photographic internet. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there are a billion of them who have an opinion, who think your work is crap and all their pictures are of like girls in short skirts on the beach. You know, with direct flash, you know, and they're just like, I'm a genius or whatever. It's like, yeah, you can't, not everyone's opinion is equal, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't get sucked into the battle for no good reason.
No.
Don't get sucked into the battle.
Don't get sucked into the battle. yeah, you can't, I don't think. I mean, look, and for people who already, I think friendship has changed over the years. Ooh, I think friendship has changed on the back of technology. I think friendship has changed as the world has gotten both bigger and smaller. I don't have very many in-person friends anymore.
Right.
And that's a weird thing, because when you're a kid, at least when I was a kid, it was all about the in-person friends. I mean, there was nothing but in-person friends. I mean, yeah, you'd call on the phone and everything, but, sure. But it was all about the in-person hang, right?
Right, right, right.
And that's not that way anymore. And it's been a difficult acceptance, realization,
you think transformation. That's where you are in your life, or do you think that's just the way the world is now? Both.
Both, I think. Yeah. I, you know, people are busy or if not busy, they're hustling. They've got things to do. They've got places to go. And the idea of, you know, hey, come over and let's listen to a record for an hour. And, you know, why I can just stream it. I could stream it on the way there and then we can talk about it or whatever. Yeah. The reconciliation of, I think it's a real loss, and I treat it as a loss, the loss of in-person friendships and contact. And I know part of that is on me, but part of that is on the world. Part of that is just we have moved on past that in a lot of ways. And maybe that's an American thing. Maybe that's just a me thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I find that when I am in a position to be in person with people, that's fuel for me.
We
do this thing on our street. A bunch of the neighbors, we have these monthly dinners, and each month we go to a different, like mom and pop kind of independent restaurant in our town. And it's usually on a weeknight because they're, you know, less busy and could appreciate the business. And it's anywhere from, I don't know, 12 to 20 of us that go, and it's people just on our street. And it's become this thing, and we've done it, I think it's almost a year now that we've done it every month. And I find that I look forward to this so much. Not just as a check-in, but to be in community, even for an hour or so with people who I see multiple times a week. But there is something different about breaking bread with someone and sharing space with someone. And I miss that, because it seems like that used to be more of a norm than it is now.
Yeah. We have Tuesday nights is burger night. There's this Half-Price burger place around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's six or seven of us on a text chain. And on Tuesday mornings, one of us will put up a burger emoji. And then the correct response is either a burger emoji of your own that you're joining, or if you're not having a burger that night for some reason, you put up an emoji that is as close as you can to, you know, what it is that you're going to order.
That's funny.
And we all show up at 6:30 and we sit, and like no one's even really drinking. So it's really not a good thing for the waitress, Melissa, who's always there.
Yeah.
But last week she told us that we were one of her favorite groups of people.
It means something.
Yeah, because we come in every Tuesday and we talk and we have deep conversations sometimes, and sometimes shallow conversations, and sometimes somewhere in between. And it marks time, right? You know,
yeah.
On Tuesdays we have burger night.
Yeah. And it's, there is something, you know, it's the Cheers thing, right? It's, sure. It's norm, you know, we go to there's a little place near us called Noodle King, and it was voted one of the top 100 Chinese restaurants in America. I don't remember what year it was, but it deserves the spot. And we always get the same thing. We always sit at the same table.
Yep.
And the server that always serves us, same thing. Yep.
Yep.
And there is something incredibly comforting about that.
Sure.
There is something that we know you know us. And there are a couple restaurants that little places that we go to that is also true.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of joy out of that. That's something so simple, but I get a lot of joy out of it.
Oh, I walked into the diner the other day on Sunday morning, and Nick was there, and I said, hey, did you hear all the people cheering for you last night? He goes, what? I go, let's go, Nick. Let's go, Nick.
Nice. The whole city came alive for you, man. What's going on? That's funny.
Yeah. But it's like a second home. Right. Like it's these third spaces or whatever they call them on sociology. Right. It's
they become community centers. They become they are important beyond the food that they serve.
And if it was a Panera and not a family run thing, it would not be the same.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a diner around the corner from us, ironically, called Nick's. Nick started it. His son, George, has now taken it over. And you know, when Nick was still working, Nick is now retired, but there was something so cool about sitting at the counter and watching the dance that Nick and his son George did at the grill.
Sure.
You know, a hand would come out, something would be placed into that hand there was a shorthand that they had together. And it was so cool to watch. And there was always, you know, how you doing? Always a smile. Hey, Nick, you know. That stuff matters.
Yeah.
And as we move, I believe, as we move more toward corporate consolidation the kind of person I am, and I believe the kind of person you are, those kinds of experiences matter even more.
When you were living on the West Coast,
yeah,
you were in Rancho Cucamonga.
I was indeed. It's not just a Bugs Bunny cartoon. It is a real place.
Which while it was still very sprawly out there in that area.
Yeah, it's very, yeah, it's full on suburbia. Basically, right. When you hit Redlands, coming from the east, when you hit Redlands, California, it's sprawl all the way to the ocean.
Right, right. So it's not like you were, and now you're sort of house in the woods. And I guess there's a double-edged sword to that, right? Like, yes, you have this house in the woods, but you also have the isolation that comes with a house in the woods, for better or for worse.
Yes and no. I mean, you know, if there's a trailhead 6 houses away from me that goes into a 800-acre park, 600-acre park.
Where you bury the bodies.
That's true. but I'm also a 9-minute walk to a metro station.
Right.
Or, you know, to a Costco is right there. A movie theater is right there. So yes, our street is this little sort of wooded enclave, which is its own kind of joy. But the proximity to other things is also very real. And it's one of the reasons that I would find it hard to leave this, because it is walkable in the way that I want it to be, but it's also sort of apart in the way that I want it to be.
Have you ever considered having a specific day of the week that you just know that you leave in the morning and just go into town for the day? Like,
you know, Adrian,
Wednesdays, I do this every single Wednesday.
I am more and more considering it. I don't want to go down to DC now because it honestly looks like,
because it's UFC fight site.
It's not just that. It's the mall. The whole mall is fenced off because they're building that Great American Fair bullshit that more and more states are dropping out of.
Yep.
So the DC that I knew from, you know, 2015 to 2020 is not currently there.
Yeah,
I mean, it's there, but it's under banners and rigmarole. So yes. Now, to your point, I could go other places. I could go to a little cafe in DuPont, or sure, I could go over to Georgetown, or, you know, whatever. So if, as long as you sort of stay away from the mall area, yes, I love that idea. But I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I was just thinking. It's interesting because, like, have you ever lived in a place that's really urban-y, kind of like where I live, where you just walk everywhere, where the car is not the thing?
I lived in Hollywood.
I
lived right behind Sunset Gower Studios in Hollywood.
Okay.
Right down the street from the Sunset Grill.
Did you like being there?
Loved it.
Okay.
Yeah. Loved it. Yeah. I lived in... That's probably the most walkable.
Just because
Pasadena. I lived in Pasadena. That was walkable.
Yeah, because I had a shoot yesterday. It was corporate headshot kind of stuff. But afterwards, my friend Claudia, who helped me out, she and I went to lunch, and she was talking about, she's like, "Oh, I have friends, you know, and they moved to these little cities, and they are all so happy." And I was just like, "Yeah, but it's funny because, like, yes, I have some people who do that, and then I have other people who leave the big city and go to a little city, and they're just like, oh God, I wish I was still in the big, like, there's just different kinds of people, right? You know?
Yeah.
Some of whom require the hustle bustle, and some who are repelled by the hustle bustle.
And there are places where you can get a little of both of that.
Yeah.
You know, Baltimore is like that. You want to be downtown Baltimore? Great. You want to be, you know, 10 minutes north in Towson or something? Great. You can do that. We're planning a trip to Pittsburgh, which I've heard is such a great town, and I keep seeing more and more about it, and I'm so excited to go see it, because it is, you know, Hollywood even uses it as a double for New York sometimes.
Yeah. If you're going up there, go to Falling Water.
Oh yeah, yeah, in Bear Run, yeah, sure,
yep, because that's really amazing.
Yeah, so you know, the you know, would I love to have a place out in the middle of nowhere where I could just be sort of off grid and do that whole thing? Yeah. I mean, I suppose there's something enticing about that. but I'd rather be close to a medical center. I'd rather be close to, you know, the services that we use.
Sure.
Could that be a second place? Sure, that would be interesting.
Yep.
You
know,
a friend of ours down the street, they have a place on the lake in New York, and across the lake is Canada. And they, you know, it's this beautiful place. They've had it for, you know, it's been in their family for generations.
Yeah, you don't need a, you don't need a place in the middle of nowhere. You just need a friend with a place in the middle of nowhere. This is the big trick.
This is the thing. I need a sofa in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you just need a friend, because everyone who has one of those places wants it to be a place where people can come and visit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Anybody who has one of those things has it so that they can bring people up to it. And they're always like, hey, you want to come up to the house? And it's like, yeah, sure. Because you only need that like a week a year.
Yeah. You know? And that's the thing, right? Is I don't want to go up there when it's, you know, 17 feet of snow.
Right.
But nor do I want to go up there when it's 130.
You also don't want to have to have a copper pipe break up there when you're 300 miles away.
No.
Like these are the reasons why I don't have a thing in the middle of nowhere. Yes. It's like, I don't want to deal with that headache.
To have cameras everywhere.
Yes. It would just give me.
I'd look like a day trader, you know, with all the screens. instead of numbers though, it's all the rooms in the house.
Now, my friend Dan yesterday told me, cause I brought up one of those, I guess Unify makes a little travel router thing that you can get. So like when you go to a hotel room, you can connect the travel router to the hotel Wi-Fi, and then all the other things you own connect to the travel router.
Oh. In what's the upside? Security?
Well, you don't have to. You could tunnel all the way back to your house and go to the internet through your house. You know, you can like have it be a VPN back to your home network and whatever.
Interesting.
But it's mostly just because if you have a lot of devices, which I don't, so I would never do this. But if you had a lot of devices, they all just sort of work. Get one thing connected and everything else just works.
Ah, okay.
And there's all kinds of other, like, I wouldn't do it. But anyway, I mentioned it yesterday at Burger Night. And Dan said, oh yeah, I've got one of those and like a little camera that you can also plug cameras into. I was like, so wait, you go to a hotel room, you connect to the Wi-Fi, and then you set up a security system in your hotel room?
Are you transporting military secrets? Yeah. Like what are you doing?
It's kind of what I said. I was like, okay. I was like, are you really worried about somebody robbing? You could just put the
suitcase with the plutonium in it.
Put the do not disturb thing on your thing and just say, I don't want any service. Thank you.
That's funny.
I thought so too.
You bring your own wireless security. That's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, good on him. If it works for you, that sets you at ease. Great.
I have one more story to tell, if you don't mind.
No, please.
Okay. So, since we aren't on 5x5, since then, whenever that was, 6 years ago.
Is 5x5 even still a thing?
I think it might be gone, whatever. Anyway, since it now points to us and not them.
Yeah.
I have been manually editing an XML file because I don't want to pay the like $25 a month for modern podcast hosting. I don't want to spend $300, $400.
What about like Podbean? It's like $6 a month.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I had it set up on, I have it set up. So I have a WordPress site with the stuff on it. And then I just stick the MP3 up there. And then I manually edit or edit with this app called Feeder on my Mac, the XML, and then put up, it's all sort of done by hand.
Yeah.
Right. Every time.
Ugh.
And exactly. Right.
Let's make a change.
Well, I did.
Oh, you did.
This is what I'm trying to. Trying to tell you.
Yeah. See, you don't tell me anything. I'm in the dark here. Hold on. Let me turn off the lights.
You want to turn them on if you're in the dark.
That's what I meant. I can't even get the joke right.
So, I decided. I've been paying for the last 2 months for reasons that don't have anything to do with me. We were experimenting with some stuff with Conrad for work. I've been paying for a $20 a month Cloud subscription. So I said to myself,
the pro subscription. Yeah, sure. Right. Sure. Yeah.
So I said to myself, I says,
hey, Bill,
let's try this vibe coding thing.
Yep.
So I install Claude's app on my Mac and I open a Claude code window. And I said to it, ready for this?
Yeah.
I have a podcast. Here's the feed. I give them the feed to the RSS. I add new episodes manually by editing and re-uploading the RSS feed. I want you to make me a native Mac app that connects to my server via FTP to download the latest version, give me the ability to add new episodes with a simple GUI, and then re-upload the new RSS feed. I also want it to upload a specific MP3 file to the correct place on the server. Ask me for any clarification. And it says, okay, install Xcode, install this. And I did.
Yeah.
And it goes, okay. It said, let me ask you some questions. I'm going to have a settings app where you enter your host username, password, paths in runtime. They're stored in the macOS keychain, so I don't need your credentials. But two decisions generally change how I build it. What protocol would you like to use for the uploads? FTP, FTPS, or SFTP? I said, okay, FTPS, recommended. It said that was recommended.
Yeah.
I said that. And it said, how do you want to enter show notes and episode descriptions? Currently, your current items on your website or in the feed have HTML paragraphs and links. And it said, do you want to keep that? And I said, sure. And it said, got it. Okay, give me a minute. About 7 minutes later, it pops open a brand new app on my Mac. Done, compiled, running on my Mac.
Great.
I go into the settings. I type in all of my credentials and like what paths are to the files and folders and things that are, and it keeps those. It keeps them like, you know, in the system. I say fetch feed. It connects to the FTP thing. It downloads the feed and it has a new episode box next to it.
Yeah.
Then I said, you know what? I also need to go up to WordPress because I need to add this WordPress thing. Can you put the same information? Here's my website, ontakingpictures.com. Go look at the format of each thing. Can you put all this stuff as a new WordPress post? And it said, do you want me to give you a copy and pasteable HTML? Or do you want me to create a WordPress draft automatically for the new thing?
Yeah.
And I said,
yeah.
All right. And it said, I can give you both options. So now I have an app. And I'm gonna take a screenshot of this and I'm gonna DM it to you because you have to see this. I have an app now, which I have not used. I will use it with this episode today.
Let me see. Oh yeah, look at that.
And it actually looks all right. All right, here's the best part. Then last night I was thinking about it. I was like, you know what? Doing the HTML in the show notes is actually a pain in the ass. I wonder if I could just have it do Markdown. I said, can you make a change? Can you make the show notes text input understand Markdown? And it goes, that's a great decision. Yeah, let me do that. All right, now it accepts Markdown. In fact, it has a little preview thing down below where it will show you what the Markdown comes down to when it's HTML.
Oh, yeah, I can see it right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you've got the brackets and the parentheses. Yeah.
Right.
And will it support the full, like, can you use asterisks for italics and bold and all that?
It'll support the full markdown? Yeah.
Wow.
Right? Now, if this works, which I think it will, maybe I have to, like, massage it a little bit to get it. You know, if it does something doesn't work, I'll try it out. I'll figure it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Jeffrey, it did this in less than 20 minutes or a half an hour of me noodling. Made me a custom Macintosh application in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That does exactly what I need it to do.
That's insane. I used Claude. I built 4 WordPress plugins. I'm working on the 5th. And it asked me, hey, you know, it said this one, it would be cool is if you could do this, 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 and this. And if you hand it off, I can do it as an app. And I went, what do you mean as an app? As a Mac app, a native Mac app. Same thing that you're doing here. He was like, now, if you want to release it wide, you're going to have to sign up for the developer program and because Apple signs it. But if it's just for your own use, we're done in minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's wild.
I gave it our logo. I said, can you use this as the app icon and add this to the MP3 before you upload it? And it goes, yeah, sure. Just give me a second.
Yeah, give me a second. Yeah, yeah.
Like, custom software.
Yeah.
We're going to use these things to, you know, remove people's jobs or whatever it is. I think that creating software that is specific to what you need it to do.
Yeah.
is a huge useful thing for this. Yeah. I mean, I would not,
not for wide release, but I need something to do this.
Yep.
Can we build this?
Yep. I have a friend who works in customer service, and she was complaining about the mail app she uses and how she has to copy and paste things from here and there. And I said, you know what? This might be the kind of thing where we could just tell Claude to make you a Gmail app with the features exactly that you need.
Mm.
Like basically make you the, you know, consumer.
Give me a front end and only show me what I need to use.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? And it's when I started playing with this, it's called OTP Publisher. The settings box, if I went up to the menu bar and went to settings.
OTPP for sure.
Hey-o. You down with OTPP? Yeah, you know me. If I went up to OTP Publisher thing on the menu bar, settings, the settings.
Yeah, what's
pop
under
up.
That settings menu? What's in there?
The FTP server info.
Ah, okay.
All the credentials user to get stuff. In.
Yeah.
Okay. Pads on the server to the RSS file. Pads to the MP3 directory. A thing, embed OTP logo as cover art before upload, on or off. Automatically did that. I did not ask it to.
Oh, that's cool.
It gives the public URLs to be used inside the feed. And then I guess with WordPress, I don't give it my credentials, but there's a whole application password thing.
Yeah.
You can create. Yeah, so yeah. I'd never used that before, but it told me how to create one. It goes, create an application password in WordPress under users profile application passwords.
Yeah.
It gets stored in your keychain. And with test buttons for testing the connection and testing the login without having it to run it. All of that was completely outside of my... So there was also, if you see in the GUI, there's like a little settings button up top next to fetch feed.
That's the one I was asking about. What's under that?
That button, for whatever reason, wasn't opening up settings initially. And I was like, oh, that's weird. But then I found it up there. And I said, hey, the button to open up settings isn't working. It goes, because I did not give it permission to do screen control on my Mac.
Ah, okay.
Like, I'm not letting you run my mouse. I don't, you know what I mean? That's a little too invasive.
Yeah.
So I said, the settings button isn't working. It goes, oh, yeah, that's a weird bug in Swift sometimes. Let me change it to this thing. And then it worked.
So now that if you click that button, that it opens up to all your credentials and all that. Cool.
But I mean, I know you had worked on some stuff. That's why I wanted to talk to you about it. If this works and does what I want it to do, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
I mean, look, you know that I had a pretty hard line about AI and I'm still very anti-data center. I am much more, especially the hyperscale data centers. I have written a big long letter to our Montgomery County Council about it.
Not in Jeffrey's backyard.
Well, they've signed a 6-month moratorium on new builds, but we're shooting for a 2-year moratorium, if not an outright ban. But an outright ban has to happen at the state level, not the county level, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I am. If you look at Apple's position. I read an article about this the other day. Apple is spending 2% of what companies like Meta and Google are spending on AI, because Apple's position is they want to do as much as possible on device.
Sure.
And that, both from a compute standpoint and from a privacy standpoint, I can get behind that much more easily than I can get behind a 22,000-acre hyperscale data center in Utah that will become the hottest, the largest heat source on the planet. Yeah, it will be the hottest, the biggest source of heat on the planet if it's allowed to go through.
I know that there are all kinds of issues with these things. But it's like, man, there are certain things that these tools can do that can... I've yet to find anything where it would actually help me in my photographic work. I mean, you know, I'll use remove object in Photoshop every once in a while or whatever it is, if it's like some kind of comp that is really hard to do.
Yeah. But I find it as a sounding board or as a strategic partner, not a creative partner.
Right, right. Or like in this case, would I have paid somebody thousands of dollars to make this app for me? No.
No. No.
If you can make me a little app, because do machines know how to talk to WordPress and upload stuff via FTP and create a new entry in an XML file? Yeah, those are things that there's code to do. Mm-hmm. So put the code together and make this thing for me.
Well, in this case, it's and this is kind of a, I mean, it's a weird distinction, but I don't think this is, I think this is very different than sort of image generation and generative AI in that respect, in that it's pulling from established code. It's not, to my knowledge anyway, it's not stealing directly from someone else. It's like there are, it's just assembling conventions of things that are already possible.
Yes. Yes. This has been done.
Am I wrong in that?
I think the idea is that this stuff, this kind of stuff has been done, you know, thousands of times and is in all kinds of open source, you know, open source repositories.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, oh, how did they do it? How did all these people do it? All this code that I've seen. Yes, we know how to do that. I mean,
yeah.
We as humans should not be doing stuff. If it's purely a mechanical thing of we need to do this again, even though we've already done it 50 times because somebody needs it in a slightly different way. Now we're going to spend all this human time doing that. That's just a waste of human time to me.
Mm-hmm.
In a, which is because we know exactly what we want. We know how to get it. It doesn't add anything, somebody doing it, and no one's enjoying building a thing like this. And if they are, you know,
I just wish that we would put more energy into solving the energy and the water problem.
Well, I mean, I think that over time, these things are going to get more efficient. And I think that there will be a point at which the you know, right now I used whatever Opus to do this, right? Which is the fancier one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't use the new one that they just undid because it's too dangerous.
Yeah. Fable. Yeah, you can't use it. Yeah.
Yeah. Fable,
there's a big thing on it now where it's like, oh, we've just turned it off for everyone.
Yeah. The government, because the government said you couldn't use it outside the US or whatever. But my feeling about that is that eventually when Sonnet or one of the lower ones, and maybe this would have worked fine in Sonnet, I didn't even bother. But when Sonnet becomes as good as Fable in a year or two, mm-hmm. right? When the cheaper one with that is not as big as the biggest frontier models is good enough for 99.9% of the stuff, then it's just a race to the bottom and it's not worth as much because the Chinese models and the open source models and the whatever it is will get up to that level where things will plateau. You see what I'm saying? For like daily tasks, it won't be that much of a thing. And similar to the smaller model that Apple's planning on putting on the phones and stuff, it's like, this will do 85% of everything you need to do on the phone, not using a whole lot of energy because, you know,
right.
We won't need to be doing the super, super, super high-end stuff for normal day-to-day work.
Right.
I think that's the only way that it works out. But yeah.
Well, that and moving away from a token-based financial model. Because
sure.
we're seeing companies burning through their entire AI budget for the year in a matter of weeks because these tokens cost more than they had budgeted for.
Oh, and I think that if they actually charge what they need to charge for the tokens, I think it may end up in a lot of situations being more expensive than the people that would have done the work.
100%. And I don't think, I mean, there have been so many studies now already that I don't even think you can dispute that anymore in the same way that you really can't dispute the environmental cost anymore.
Sure, sure. You know, but for me, I look at it and I think, you know what, for something like this, which is this niche thing that takes me 15, 20 minutes every time I want to publish a stupid episode and is error prone. And you know what I mean? You know, I also, you know, you wrote me a couple of weeks ago and you said, you know, the OTB website on mobile is missing a margin on the right hand side margin is whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been the theme that I was using for that is very old now. It's like, you know, from 2011 or something like that. And so I grabbed the whole theme in a zip file and I stuck it in one of these things and I said, hey, you know, fix this thing in mobile, whatever. Also, can you rewrite this in modern ways? Like, don't change the design a pixel if you don't have to. Just get out the cruft and make everything more efficient and modern. And mm-hmm. it goes, okay, yeah, I can do that. And it spit out a new version and I put it up there and I jumped between the two of them and I couldn't see a difference except the new one is like half the size. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like for things like that, like could I or somebody who's really good at CSS way better than me have gone through and rebuilt the stupid WordPress theme to be like, sure, but why should a human do that? That's just awful work, you know? I don't know. It was very cool. My friend Dan has apparently he's in the buying and selling of Lego kit thing. You know, you buy ones
that
you
explain
think,
that to me.
Some Lego kits go up in price over time. So some people buy them, keep them sealed, and then sell them later when their prices go up because they only make a certain amount of each one.
Oh, they're limited availability. Okay. I didn't know that. I don't. Yeah.
I understand, I don't know. I'm not a Lego person.
Yeah.
But he was telling me how he built a whole sort of basically like a dashboard that goes out on the internet and finds out. It keeps track of which ones he has in his closet, and it keeps track of like what they're going for on eBay. Like trackers over time. Like he's basically built a Bloomberg terminal for Lego kits. You know,
that's great.
I mean, yeah. See, that's just.
But like, again, that personal, like, I need a thing
that no one is ever going to make.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, and I just think that that's really the whole idea of specific software to solve your need and nothing more. That doesn't need to be everywhere. I just think it's a really neat idea, and I, you know, if this works. I don't know how many more of these things, but I'll now know, oh, I can solve that. Could I have written something like this? Yeah, in 6 months, maybe, you know.
What about a feature that goes, if you didn't want to do this, because I know you do, actually, I don't know if you like doing it, but in terms of a description for the post.
Oh, sure, yeah. Oh, that it listens to the show and
listen to the
out-
show and give me a friendly, you know, 3-sentence description of what's in the episode.
You know what? I could totally try to, you know what? Maybe I'll try to do that for today's show. Is that crazy?
And I think they use Whisper. Isn't that the API? That?
Yeah, but I think, I don't even think you need, I think nowadays you could just stick. Okay. I'll tell you, you want the craziest thing? Here's the craziest thing. Last week I was messing around and I said, I want to see if Claude could make me a shoot schedule for my movie based off the script. And so I gave it the script and I said, I want to shoot this thing, really low budget. I gave the budget. I said, I imagine it being somewhere around 18 days. Do your thing. So it figures out all the different locations. It figures out, you know, what days, what makes the most sense to like interlock.
Wait, I'm sorry. Can I interrupt real quick? Is it suggesting locations or do you enter the locations of where you want to shoot?
Well, let me get there.
Okay.
I mean, there are descriptions in the script where it says, you know, this takes place here or in an office or whatever it is. And it's so it's saying like, okay, you got to find an office. I said that I had most of my locations already sort of set. So it goes and it reads the script and it gives me a big long thing of like day one, you're shooting here. Day two, you're shooting there. I noticed on scene 34, Edward calls James on the phone. Edward's in his office. James is in his office. So you need to do a pickup shot of Edward in his office doing that on day 14 when you're there. Like it noticed those kinds of things, right?
Wow.
So it keeps going and it says, you know, in here you talk about shooting in Central Park. Do you know if you're shooting in Central Park, you're going to need these specific permits? These are the places you go get these permits. It's kind of hard to do. And I said, well, what if I do it all sort of guerrilla style? Nothing goes on the ground. We're just walking through. And it says, yeah, you can do that except for this. You might want to consider shooting in a different park because these people are not there at these times and you don't need this permit. And then I said, can you suggest parks? And it says, yes, you could try this park in Brooklyn, this park in Manhattan. They look the same. They have a similar feel, blah, 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 blah. Okay.
Wow.
So it comes out with this whole thing. Now here's where it gets really creepy. I said, I see you here.
I can't open the door, Bill.
Pod bay door, Bill. I said, I shot one of the scenes to this movie as a test. It edited down scene 13 or whatever it is. I said, it edited down to about 5 minutes and we shot the footage in 6 hours total, 3 hours of shooting. You know, a couple hours to set up, an hour to tear down, and three hours of shooting in the middle. I said, does that give you any more information? And it said, well, you know, I don't know if you just did a quick thing with your phone. I don't know if it really thinks. And I said, if I upload you the video, would that be useful? And it said, yes.
Wait, so you uploaded the scene that you
shot? I uploaded the scene that I shot.
Yeah.
To the machine. And I said, it said, okay, let me take a look. And it watched the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then it said, it did an analysis of what I shot, it took stills from it. It said, oh, I can see you have coverage. You have master shots. The lighting looks really good. Okay. You say you can, you have all the lighting you used here is stuff that you can have for free. Okay. I can lower your lighting budget because if you can get this kind of look with the stuff you have, you're going to need $3,000 for lighting, whatever, instead of $6,000 or whatever the thing is.
Right.
It was doing like a look analysis of my video.
That's funny.
It's super crazy. It was even commenting on my editing. It was creepy. Now, is this going to take the place of a line producer? No, you still need somebody there to do that kind of stuff. But as a thing of like, let's have a document that me and a line producer and a cinematographer can sit down and talk about the schedule and make changes from, massively useful.
Wow.
You know, wow. The fact that it analyzed my video is what killed me.
Yeah.
Like I uploaded video and it knew what it was. I get a link to the Vimeo and it said, to be honest, I have a limit here. I can pull the page's metadata, but I can't actually watch the video. The fetch returns the description, credits, thumbnails, not the footage. And it said, can you give me the actual video? And I said, yeah, here it is. And it goes, oh, file reading skill handler. The skill doesn't cover video. Let me figure out how to watch MP4s. And then it started doing an analysis of how many cuts per minute and
crazy.
It is crazy. So I don't know. It's like this tool, these tools are very, very cool. None of that changes what I do creatively.
No, but again,
but it helps with the non-creative stuff.
Yeah. As a strategic partner.
Absolutely.
As a look for patterns, look for, you know, data inconsistencies, that kind of thing.
Yep.
I think it is valuable in certain situations.
Yep. Anyway, I just thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Yeah. That's cool.
So I'm going to try the On Taking Pictures publisher.
The OTPP.
The OT. OTPPPP. Can we use a Hockney's photographic work as our photographer of the week? I don't think we ever used him as a photographer.
Sure. Yeah.
Because, man, there's that one picture. Do you know this one?
Hockney.
There's this one thing. Here we go.
Graphs. Hockney photo.
There's this one here, which is like this street out west.
Is this the one with the stop sign?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, Pear Blossom Highway. Yep, yeah, that's a cool one.
That is really cool. I'll try to use that as the image for the. Oh, see, there's a tool that I can add to this thing. I'll just say, can I also give you an image to use it in the WordPress post? Might as well
make sure you tell it set it as the featured image.
Yep. See, this is like sometimes it is like having a little assistant.
Yeah.
You know, if I was saying to it, you know what? Go through these 700 pictures and just get rid of the ones that have closed eyes because I'm not going to use those anyway. Like, that's a useful thing.
Yeah.
Do I want it to do my retouching for me? No. Because I like
it. But again, that strategic partner is I think, where it becomes useful for some people.
Yeah. Anyway, so I will. So anyone who hasn't seen David Hockney, you all know the paintings from California and stuff. But if you haven't seen some of the photographic collage work that he's done over the years, this is the kind of stuff I've played with a little bit, but never really dug too deeply into.
Yeah.
It's
funny. This is the, what is that technique? The, the Brennizer technique.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
where you take a bunch of,
this is just that without merging them.
I know that guy.
Do you really?
Yeah. Yeah. Ryan.
That's funny. I wonder if he's a Hockney fan.
Yeah, but he actually has it nice and clean, right? Like the whole idea is that it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. These are unmerged. This is just the raw data.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I mean, I think it's cool too because he uses different focal lengths and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he's close up to some things, further away from other things, and he kind of just merges it all together. I saw one of these. There was a show. Heather and I were trying to figure out where it was, and I think we came down on that it was in Philadelphia, maybe. There was a Hockney show in the last 10 years that we saw where they had the original of this there.
Hmm.
And I remember coming around the corner, just looking at all the paintings. And I came around the corner and I was like, man, that's a left-hand turn for him.
Yeah.
But I think you could make the argument in a really cool way.
Yeah. You could make the argument that his career was just a bunch of left-hand turns. He followed the impulses that many of us go, nah, that's a goofy idea.
Yeah.
He just went, yeah, that's a goofy idea. Like there was the intent was different. The enunciation, I guess, was different, you know?
Yeah. Well, see, that gets back to the whole idea, you know, just choosing something to be, instead of seeing it as a negative, see it as a positive, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that picture here, hold on. I'm going to send you this. That picture is big here. That collage.
Yeah.
Here. Here's him standing.
It's basically
next to
like
it.
Each one is an 8x10 kind of thing. Yep. Yep. That's exactly what it looked like.
Yeah. So it's probably, what would that be? 6 feet tall by maybe
8, maybe.
Yeah. 8 feet wide.
Yeah.
That's a big piece.
Do you think size matters?
In work? Yes. Because you can't, I mean, it's something that I've had conversations with galleries, you know, work bigger, work bigger, work bigger, because they can't sell a 4x5 painting for $17,000.
Right. Yeah. Although sometimes you see little tiny things, and that's kind of cool too.
I think it depends on the work. You know, some pictures, you know, like Crudson's work, for example, I don't think it works as a small print.
Right.
You know, I think that work almost needs to become like a Rothko color field, you know, or Frankenthaler or something, where it wants to, if you're standing 6 feet away from it, it wants to take up your whole field of view.
Yeah. And I think that the detail in those kinds of images only makes sense with scale.
But then if you look, like I saw a show of Cindy Sherman's portraits, and they were big, you know, 8, 9, 10 feet on a side. And I was like, I don't think this benefits from being that big.
Yeah. Those are better at 16 by 20.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So. By the way, apparently I used Claude, and I said, tell me about find me major David Hockney shows in American museums in the last 15 years. And it said the standout museum show in that window is the Met retrospective David Hockney at the Metropolitan in November 2017 to February 2018. So it was at the Met.
Hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Hockney show Getty LA. When was that? Oh, is there a new? Oh, there's a new show there. No, it's not that. I don't know when it was. 2014, 2015, something like that.
You're right. You know, it's funny. We had dinner the other day with these two old gentlemen, this couple, Mel and Bobby, that are our friends, and they're 85 and 83. And we were talking about having seen the new Spielberg movie the other day. And we said, do you guys go see a lot of movies? And one of them said to the other, yeah, you know, they got those talkies now, Mel. He was making a joke. It made me so happy. I was like, you're almost as old as Jeffrey.
Oh, there it is. There it is. Yeah. You know, when my friend Al Jolson and I used to go to the movies. pictures. Yeah.
That's a joke for all you kids out there.
Next week, I would like to talk, or next time, whatever we do this, I want to talk about Disclosure Day. I haven't seen it yet, so don't tell me anything.
Go see it.
I'm very excited.
No, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm just going to say I'm in Chicago next Sunday to Thursday, so maybe 2 weeks.
Okay. A couple weeks.
Yeah.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, no, thank you. Fun. Yeah. And thanks for sharing your experience around Coupon. I think that, you know, grief and loss are, they're part of life. I think that for you and I specifically, they have been maybe a greater part of our lives than we would like to have, you know, had them be. True. But, you know, I it's important, and there are lessons there in how to honor those people moving forward and how to come to grips with their absence.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, and I think it often gives perspective.
Yeah.
That people don't always have, and I don't know, it's useful. So anyway, thank you. Rest in peace, William Coupon.
Yeah.
We will talk to you in a couple weeks. Have a good one.
Podcast at On Taking Pictures if you want to get a hold of us.
Yeah. And please do get a hold of us. We like getting
emails. Yeah. We love getting emails. Yeah. Send them. Send away. Voicemails. You can do voicemails too. If you want to like record a voicemail and attach it like Tom in Michigan does.
Oh, I love that.
We love those. We really
Tom in Michigan's the best.
Yeah.
He might be the best. Got
like he might. If
anybody out there want to fight Tom in Michigan as the best OTP fan.
Yeah. You know, if you come to DC,
you can find Tom in Michigan and duke it out. I'm not getting involved.
There's a cage on the White House lawn that you can use that's still there, apparently.
Bye, Jeffrey.
All right. We'll see you later.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you want to say. Say, will